want to begin by reading a poem to watch a fire grow by, I think. It's a poem by John Berryman. Lived around the Twin Cities, died a few years ago. Winner of a Pulitzer Prize, National Book Award. At the end of his book, Love and Fame, he had to the Lord. This is the first of those addresses. Master of beauty, craftsman of the snowflake, inimitable contriver, endower of earth so gorgeous and different from the boring moon, thank you for such as it is my gift. I have made up a morning prayer to you, containing with precision everything that most matters. According to thy will, the thing begins. It took me off and on 2 days. It does not aim at eloquence. You have come to my rescue again and again in my impassable, sometimes despairing years. You have allowed my brilliant friends to destroy themselves, and I am still here, severely damaged, but functioning. Unknowable as I am unknown to my guinea pigs, how can I love you? I only as far as gratitude and awe confidently and absolutely go. I have no idea whether we live again. It doesn't seem likely from either the scientific or the philosophical point of view, but certainly all things are possible to you, and I believe as fixedly in the resurrection appearances to Peter and to Paul as I believe I sit in this blue chair. Only that may have been a special case to establish their initiatory faith. Whatever your end may be, accept my amazement. May I stand until death forever at attention for any your least instruction or enlightenment. I even feel sure you will assist me again, master of insight and beauty. Well, tonight's topic is something of an experiment, and I hope we all are up to that. It's a bit different from perhaps any topic that has been attempted and from any that we intend to take up in the next few weeks. I mean it to be an exercise in problem seeking rather than problem solving. The question is, what's the question? Or better, what are the questions? And I'll spell that out further in just a few moments. But there's a strong suggestion in the topic, living and loving the questions, for the way in which we carry on our conversation and our dialogue together during these times and in this place. The suggestion is that there are some questions that are not so easily answered, but rather they invite us to take them on, to live them precisely as questions. Perhaps you've experienced in your own life, your own struggle, that there are some answers that have a longer period of gestation than others. Some questions take longer to give birth to anything like an answer than others. The college student who is asking, what career shall I choose? Shall I marry? What am I doing here at the university, here in this world, is asking some hard to answer but very livable questions. I've heard some other hard to answer but very livable questions in the 5 days since we came into the village. When Walt Bowman was discussing Mark with us, he said that when Jesus went to his cross, it was an open question for the disciples whether this man was indeed God's Christ, the bringer of God's redemptive reign into the world, or whether he was false, blasphemous, lawless, a false guide. And the disciples had to live with that as an open question. The New Testament is a struggling with that as a question and the living out of an answer. And it is indeed the question of our faith. Is Jesus the Christ? Our whole life is some kind of an answer to that question. Larry Rasmussen asked whether perhaps we are at the end of one era and the beginning of another. Looked for signs of that. And then asked, if we are, how do we get from here to there? Paul Hain has been struggling with us over some questions of social justice, equality of opportunity, if that's a happy phrase for you this morning, in terms of the affirmative action in the face of the Bakke decision, as an example. How do we achieve social justice in our nation, in our world? This afternoon, some of us began to read a book which is asking the question, who are Christians and Jews to each other? I don't expect that we will answer and dispose of that question, but that we may find some ways to live it precisely as a question. And indeed, Holden Village seems to me to be one large and very important question. We can phrase the question in terms of John and Mary's book, the title of it, What Are the Things That Make for Peace? What kind of lifestyle is consistent with a peaceful profession, with our Christian confession in this world? Well, I hope you get the idea. There are some questions that are too precious to be answered and put away. They beg to be lived. They beg indeed to be loved. We may not always love them. We sometimes will hate them and resent them. What we hate, what we love, we also hate, it seems. But they are questions that are worthy of that kind of attention from us. To live a question means to be patient with it and gentle with oneself in the midst of it. It means to test various possible answers, to try them out for a time, and not to foreclose alternatives prematurely. Most important of all for us in this setting, I think, on these nights, to live a question means to be open to change, to be open to dialogue. It means to seriously engage a question over an extended period. Not to be lazy with it, not to let it lie, not to hope it'll go away, but to seriously engage it, an existential struggle with it. To live a question means to recognize that some questions can only be lived. They can never be definitively answered. I've suggested that there's an important consequence here for the way in which we carry on our talk with one another. If this is indeed the case, if this is the nature of any of the questions that we take up here, how important it will be for us to be respectful of difference of opinion. How important that we take on a dialogical style in our lively conversation with one another. If I have some pretty firm ideas about a question, and I talk with you and find out that you have some rather different ideas and opinions about it, it really forces me to sit back, to open up, and to listen. And to give you the same respect and attention that I hope you will give me. Tomorrow night we're planning to take up the question of homosexuality in the church. it will be a serious test of our dialogical ability. And if the outcome of it is that we simply polarize and argue with one another, it would be far better that we not take it up. And there are some who have suggested that that's indeed the case. But if we can be dialogical about it, how profoundly helpful we could be to one another. Some questions, I think, invite us into that kind of dialogue, and we might well give ourselves to it. So, some questions are too big and too important just to be answered and disposed of, but they invite us to live with them and to love them precisely as questions. And our challenge tonight will be to attempt to discover some of these questions. But before we sharpen that a bit, some of you will recognize, I'm sure, the text for the title, for the remarks that I have made. Rainer Maria Rilke was a German poet born in the late 19th century, active in the early 20th. One of his more popular writings is Letters to a Young Poet, and it comes from an exchange of correspondence that Rilke had with a man named Franz Kappus, who was not yet 20 years old when he found himself headed into a career, into a profession, into an occupation, namely being a poet, that he was very uncertain about. And he heard of Rilke, who was less than 10 years his senior, and he decided to pack up a stack of his poetry and to send them with a cover letter to Rilke, and the cover letter simply said, "Can I be a poet?" Well, they carried on a correspondence for quite a number of years, and this booklet, Letters to a Young Poet, consists of 10 of Rilke's letters to him. I read from number 4. "Very dear Mr. Kappus, I have left a letter from you long unanswered, not that I had forgotten it. On the contrary, it was of the sort that one reads again when one finds them among one's correspondence. And I recognized you in it as though you had been close at hand. It was the letter of May 2nd, and you surely remember it. When I read it as now, in the great quiet of these distances, I am touched by your beautiful concern about life, more even than I had felt it in Paris, where everything resounds and dies away differently because of the too great noise that makes things vibrate. Here, where an immense country lies about me, over which the winds pass coming from the seas, here I feel that no human being anywhere can answer for you those questions and feelings that deep within them have a life of their own. For even the best err in words when they are meant to mean most delicate and almost inexpressible things. But I believe, nevertheless, that you will not have to remain without a solution if you will hold to objects that are similar to those from which my eyes now draw refreshment." He must have been in a place like Holden Village. "If you will cling to nature, to the simple in nature, to the little things that hardly anyone sees, and that can so unexpectedly become big and beyond measuring, if you have this love of inconsiderable things and seek quite simply as one who serves to win the confidence of what seems poor, then everything will become easier, more coherent, and somehow more conciliatory for you, not in your intellect perhaps, which lags marveling behind, but in your inmost consciousness, waking and cognizance. You are so young, so before all beginning, and I want to beg you as much as I can, dear sir, to be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and to try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms, and like books that are written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answers which cannot be given you because you would not be able to live them, and the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer. Living and loving the questions. Well, let me try to mark out the space for our possible conversation this evening. I said that I envision it as an exercise not in problem solving so much as in problem finding, problem seeking. The question is, what is the question? What are the questions? What are the questions of our age, of our time in history? What are the questions of your age and your situation in life? You see, the presupposition of all of this is that there are questions that have grabbed us, that have attached themselves to us, and that won't let us go until we live with them and love them. We may not have chosen them. It seems to me that most of the questions that we live with in our life are not questions that we have chosen, but rather questions that have chosen us. We may hate them, we may resent them, or we may more patiently and more gently love them, and love them graciously into an answer. So, the question, what are the questions that have grabbed you? What are the questions that have grabbed our society? Perhaps what are the questions that have grabbed our church? You may want to reflect on that for a bit, but I think it would be useful to the enterprise that we begin here tonight, to get some kind of a table, perhaps, of these kinds. It's terribly big and all-inclusive, very urgent. What is a just society? You may want to break it down. You may, or anybody else may. Been clear in our conversation so far in the last 5 days that that is an urgent question for us.
Why is there evil and why is there suffering?
Why is there evil? Why is there suffering? Those are questions which it seems to me the Christian faith has recognized from the beginning don't have answers, but can only be lived creatively, lived responsibly. Beautiful examples of what Rilke is talking about here. Dave?
What is Christian community?
You emphasized Christian. What is different about community that is Christian, huh?
The question that you began to pose about the, are we at the end of one era going into another, is an intriguing one. Thinking of the Bible and passages that, particularly in Revelation, that talk about a time when we would all live in peace together and there would be no sorrows and no hurts and pains and no one doing evil to each other. If I were to think of that as the era that we were moving into and how we would get from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm. Well, that at least stands there as a great beacon. I guess we have often said that that's perhaps something that we won't achieve historically. But that doesn't mean it's without its historical pull, its magnetism, its attraction, its demand on us. Yeah, the question that Larry was developing in terms of the old age, new age thing was very much, how do we respond to that? How do we live responsibly? And the suggestion was that a new age is not our own creation. It's not something that we manufacture and do Promethean style. part of our response is waiting, but not just waiting.
Along those lines, I guess I always think about the word sanctification and just how much of that can possibly take place either in a person's life or in a community or in a society. I wonder if we don't sometimes swing back and forth between saying it will never be that way until the end, or on the other hand saying, you know, we sure got to do better than we're doing.
Sanctification, new life, growth in the Spirit are questions we never exhaust.
World hunger is a problem that bothers me tremendously, which is touched by what someone said over here about why is there suffering. I'm sure, but I suppose since Christ said we will have the poor with us always, it's going to be an everlasting question. But it's a very frustrating one when you have so much.
You're not letting Jesus' remark simply cast it off as a question of no concern.
I don't mean that.
Right, you're letting it indicate that it's an eternal question, one that we really
have to
deal with. I just
mean that it's the conversation that we're having so much.
Yes. But it's one, as I understand, I was not here myself, but it very much occupied the concern of the Holden community for about 2 weeks, about a week ago. That is that far back when there were a couple people. Larry Rasmussen was one. Charles Lutz, I guess particularly, was raising that, and very possibly some of the people who are in the room tonight were participating in that.
It seems to me that the slides on Sweden last night at the tail end and the vision of the empty churches kind of brought to my mind comments that many in the Christian denominations in our own country are wondering is the Christian church throughout the world dying in some sense and in need of renewal, restoration? To me, that's a big question.
Yeah. The renewal of the church. That must strike most of us where we go to church.
Assuming that there's intelligent life on other planets, how would we deal with the settlement of beings from another planet on the Earth? And what would that do with our theology?
That could be preceded by a question, is there intelligent life on this planet?
Says that could be preceded by the question, is there intelligent life on this planet? It's like the question, is there life after death, can be preceded by the question, is there life after birth? That's certainly a question that's a function of our age. The cosmic world in which we live is certainly increased, at least in its intensity upon us, and this kind of question, which used to sound like science fiction and still to some people does, it's becoming less and less that way. You use theology in a very proper sense. What would that do to our theology? You could say that in all kinds of secular ways too.
It brings to mind the question of when does life begin and when does it end?
And that sounds like a question out of what debate?
Medical ethics is where I'm referring.
Yes. Yes. Does the abortion issue contain a number of such questions? It'd be nice if we could sharpen those up a bit.
How shall we feed so many?
Question of world hunger?
Yeah, from the standpoint of there are that many and we haven't anything to feed them with. It amounts to anything. And yet we do.
We do what?
We begin with what we have.
We may even find that we have enough.
You're going to be discussing the problem of an attitude towards homosexuality. I guess I think there are some other sexual moral concerns that are much more pressing than that one for people in their everyday life. What is sexually moral to the Christian? What should the relationship between a man and a woman be? What should the responsibility of the family be? There's a pretty burning question that the church kind of jumps around the fringes of.
Why are we asking those questions today?
We're asking them because a style of life that is very troublesome to the young people is cropping up that through media and through other things is being taught to children, to our children. And it's a change. It's a very disturbing change to people. Yeah. But even more than that, I guess as a parish pastor, I see it as a change that I got to pick up the pieces for. And I don't enjoy it.
They're very existential questions. People's daily lives and existence and happiness are at stake. You talked about change. Maybe there's a question there. How does the Christian deal with change? How does a human being deal with change? How do we evaluate change? What norms do we apply? Does the Christian... I think this was William Sloane Coffin's way of putting it. Does the Christian put the freeze on history? Or is the Christian open to radical change?
I guess one thing that bothers me is when there's open-mindedness, it's irresponsibility. Mm.
It relates to the whole attitude toward change. How be open-minded but still responsible?
People say I'm becoming more open-minded, and as I look at what they're becoming open-minded about, I feel they're becoming irresponsible, and I have that same battle within me.
That's likely to be a question in many of our questions. Yes. Got something to do with our ability to be dialogical. To be dialogical doesn't mean that you don't hold any opinions or hold them very strongly. You may hold them very strongly, even as you are in some way open to listening to people who hold others, particularly people who strike us with their thoughtfulness, their integrity, calling for our respect.
I didn't know this too, is the attitude that I hear an awful lot of people do about, well, everybody should have a right to decide their own style. I have no right to tell somebody else what to do. And the Christian responsibility comes into some of them. That's the question where it comes in. And how much is freedom that we give to other people, and how much is like letting our kids go and play in traffic? Which just shows a lack of love of that. The unwillingness to get out and say something.
There are a couple questions that I have to struggle with every day working in downtown San Francisco, where the suicide rate is high, loneliness just shouts from the buildings there, and you see people on the almost every corner going through trash cans asking for a nickel or something, and you struggle with the question, why didn't somebody reach out a long time ago? Because usually it's too late. And what is it in ourselves that keeps us from embracing and reaching out to those people who need it? And also, how, you know, after you work hard for that hard-earned buck, how much of it should you keep? And how much of it should you give away? Because when you see so many people around you that have so much, and at the same time see a lot of people who don't have anything, you know, you start realizing you're just not taking perhaps the Bible seriously enough. And this is a question of just how much to give and how much to keep responsible. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Seems to me that along with that question would come the question, how can I relate to other people the way Christ would want me to relate to them, or the way He relates to me? How can I be, quote, a little Christ to others?
That would seem to raise, for one thing, the question of justice, which has been raised. But beyond that, perhaps the question of mercy, the relationship then of mercy and justice in our personal lives, in our social lives.
Often it seems that the questions that are raised that we try to cope with as individuals, in a Christian sense, seem to be answered as a body. Such as the questions that are being raised on poverty or giving to those in need or helping those in need. If any one of us tries to tackle all the problems and all the needs that we see around us, we'll get swamped and discouraged and broken. And so there still needs to be a defining of and a real listening to God as to how much and where and to whom and how for each one of us, but then the answer seems to come when the whole body functions together, which it just seems to be beginning to do, beginning to work as an organism, living and moving and working together, though we may be separate spatially, to answer some of these questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Dave mentioned the question of Christian community earlier, I just saw behind that the question of community. And that's kind of implicit in what you're saying there. How do we be community together in a way that we can be responsive and responsible to the situations, the problems, poverty, injustice, discrimination, oppression, etc. Please, Jim.
It seems to me that we also have to ask the question whether we as individuals, as church people, have turned over our responsibilities, even as every community in this country has turned over its responsibilities to the bureaucrats in Washington, predicating all of our movements on what can we get from Uncle Sam to do the job which needs to be done in our own areas. And we have forgotten that he who dances must ultimately play his fiddle. how many of our social service agencies in the Lutheran Church are able to make do with the donations of the members served by that social service agency? How many of us as individuals give till it hurts to meet the needs of those that we are supposedly brothers to? It's much easier to give enough to match from federal and state governments what I think Christ would mean for us to do.
The question of government and the relation of the individual to government is a terribly big, fundamental, and complex question. Hearing that, I'm always glad that somebody like Paul Hain is in the village. He's thought long and hard about many of the dimensions of that. And that's part of what he's helping us sort our way through in his time slots with us in our program.
On the way out here, I heard the radio program and the guy was talking about self-government. He says you cannot have self-government without self-discipline. And this seemed to ring very clear to me that if you don't have self-discipline, you'll eventually give up your right to self-government. You'll end up on dictatorship right here.
Okay. Are there some questions that bug you, that irritate you, that you resent, but that are thrust upon you?
I guess another question that I have is, we in our theology look to the Spirit to incite and faith and to bring about those changes in people's lives. And I guess the question is why does the Spirit at times move so slowly?
You really want to lay it on the Spirit, huh? The slow change?
Why is it that whenever I do something good, the Spirit always gets the credit? Whenever I blow it, I take it again.
We're getting into some properly and deeply theological questions. We deal with those in the village too. One of the people in the village is a village theologian. In fact, actually, there usually are several of these. So these kinds of questions get space.
The question I have been asking myself is, what is my role in this world as a Christian? What am I supposed to do? How much should I do? Or where, you know, what limits are there?
Right. Question of responsibility. Question of duty.
When you think of Holden as being a place apart where you can feel closer to God and to other Christians, how does one go back into the automated world that seems to control so much of our lives in that hurry and hustle and bustle and take the Spirit of Holden with us?
That could attach to the question of community again. What is the function of community, and how can community export its style? How can community signify the things that make for peace and so expand and export them in the world? We've mentioned a lot of very social questions and problems. I suppose that's natural. It occurs to me that there are some very personal questions of the same sort that many of us are wrestling with much of the time. The question of identity is one of these. Who am I? Isn't that a question we spend our life answering? Who am I and what am I good for? Who am I and what am I here for? Question of vocation, question of mission. Last week we spent a little time discussing the question of loneliness. What can I do about my loneliness? What is my loneliness saying to me? What is it calling me to? Well, this has been helpful. Is it pretty complete for you? Have we only touched on a few of the many, or have we included the most significant and pressing and urgent? Do the other questions that we have maybe fit somewhere under or into these that we've already posed? Do you have the feeling that there still are some very large segments of our life we haven't questioned yet? Large questions we haven't raised?
I think that perhaps people in my age group either have face the same type of problem or will be facing it due to the question raised about our changing moralities. Supposedly having tried to raise children in the spirit and admonition of the Lord, and then having two out of three leave not only the church, but leave supposedly any relationship to Jesus Christ. One of them becoming a Mormon for a couple of years and then leaving that. Not being shocked at all, well, maybe a little shocked to have him come to his house on an unexpected visit and have a girl crawl out of bed and kiss him goodbye. Then living with another girl, another one after that. Always happy to see us, never willing to accept her invitation to go to the church when he comes home. Another boy, 3 years ago, leaving any relationship to the church, getting married to a girl he really shouldn't have gotten married to, separating, and getting back with her, now getting divorced. Very pleasant when we talk to them, but very resistant and cold prayer table, and resistant going to church. Now, how do you handle a situation like that? We came to the conclusion that we could love the sinner without loving the sin. But it is difficult to not have a sense of guilt and wonder, where did we go wrong? Yet when you think about the statistics of 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 marriages ending in divorce, when you look out and see large numbers of kids living as our kids live, it's kind of comforting to know that you aren't the only one that has failed. Some questions raised on that subject would be worthwhile. We're still living through the answers.
Mm-hmm. It's a very good way to look for questions. Rather than just thinking analytically or theoretically, take a lived experience like that. There probably are clusters of questions in that. But if there is a if there is an experience that gives you joy and delight to look at it, to find the questions that are there, if there's a situation that really unnerves you, vexes you, upsets you, preoccupies you, distracts you, to look at it steadily, whole, to see what are the questions that are there. Questions, again, not often capable of quick answers. How do I bring up my children? How do I rear my children responsibly? I suspect every parent haunted by that.
To your earlier question, it seems like the really important questions that may be bothering on many of our minds really aren't to the surface yet. They're buried deep.
Mm.
We often repress these things, and the idea of searching for the question, I think, kind of hits it on the head.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not ourselves searching even, but asking God to reveal what are the questions. I was reminded of one of the givens in a Tolstoy play was that it's not given to man to know his needs. And that's kind of like what we're saying here.
Yes.
We don't know what the questions are.
Yes.
In our lives, we don't know what's important to ask.
Yes. But how much we get toward them when we sit in community like this, share experiences, and probe the questions with one another. How much comfort we get, even when we're not dealing with answers, but just dealing with questions.
And how helpful it is to come before God in prayer for these things that so often for me something will come out that I hadn't thought of, or if I had even gone into prayer superficially and out of it, I would be sort of praying off the top of my head, but once in a while there'll be a really big central issue that will come to the surface, or the right question to ask, or something very basic, like, and I guess it has to do with honesty too. Why can't I get close to you, God?
Hmm.
Or what is the obstacle that's in my life that keeps me from growing? Or any number of things that are so easily skipped over by our rote way of living.
Hmm. Prayer can be an offering to God of our questions, not just our answers. And that's part of the living of them. In fact, what a helpful way to live a question, prayerfully. Yes. Well, I don't intend for this to go on all night. Maybe some of the subsequent forums will go a bit longer, but I think if we can conclude close to 10 tonight, that would be very helpful. It's been, in a sense, a symbolic exercise, the exercise of problem-seeking. I've appreciated the spirit and the style in which it's come. I hope that some of this serenity prevails as we get it into the nitty-gritty of some of the specific questions that we'll be dealing with on future evenings. I, in fact, take the role of the village philosopher, which is the uneasy title that they assign to someone like me, to be some such symbolic role. The function of the village philosopher is to locate and to raise up questions that are implicit or explicit in the conversation of the village, whether in formal sessions in this room, in informal conversations at the dining hall, or whatever. And it seems to me that that's what we all are engaged in. And to have perhaps one person who symbolizes that which we all are engaged in would not be an unprecedented thing in human history and human community. So I hope that Holden can be rich for you in that way, that we can in fact work at being community together in just this way, work at being community together by the questions that we raise and by the respectful way we deal with them and deal with each other. Tomorrow night we'll undertake a rather difficult one. Thank you.